Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Weber. Today, we're going to go over understanding wellness through the NCSF Certified Personal Training Exam. Remember, these modules and these lectures are to prepare you for that final exam. The labs are going to be geared toward the application of the material. And so therefore, if you're looking for lab materials, look at the lab lectures. All right. So here is lecture one of understanding wellness. We have our learning goals. We want to first recognize the six categories of wellness. We want to understand the factors that affect both health and wellness. We want to understand the difference between physical activity and exercise. We want to define the three major exercise principles. We want to understand the difference between an elastic and plastic response. And we want to be able to quantify activity based on intensity. The evolution of health. Okay, so we have a traditional, contemporary, and a key concept, bold figures we're going to go over here. So traditional, only examine susceptibility to disease and physiological measures. So at first, we thought that really upon examination that we found diseases and we found that there was physiological measurements for these diseases. Now, we also consider wellness. Okay, so contemporary medicine or health, now we look at wellness and it suggests a person to be viewed holistically. So now we're looking at the whole person. So before we examined the susceptibility to disease and we looked at their patterns of behavior, now we're looking at their full body, their whole health and wellness. So the key concept here is health entails both physical and mental state, as well as a lifestyle behavior. So you want to understand that it's both physical and mental. So it's how we're feeling, how we're thinking, the people that we hang out with, what we do on a day-to-day basis, as much as the physical appearance of ourselves. So a lot of that is psychological. So an evolved concept of wellness includes having physical health, mental health, emotional health, intellectual health, social health, and environmental health. So physical health being, your fitness and cardiorespiratory wellness. Your mental health would be, how do you react to certain situations? How do you overcome stress? Emotional health, that might be how you control your feelings, how you are able to tell people things or express things to others. Intellectual health, are you reading? Are you writing? Are you keeping up with the new research in your profession? Are you getting new CEUs? Are you getting new credentials, certifications? Are you continuing to learn or are you degressing? And then you have social health. Who do you hang out with? Who are your friends? Who do you keep close contact with? This is going to improve your overall quality of health in life. And then you have your environmental health, which is obviously taking care of the environment and then also living within your environment. And so the environment that you live in can affect the way you are as it comes to your health. So healthy behaviors equals wellness. So a healthy lifestyle reflects positive behaviors that benefits one physical or mental well-being. A person who lives a healthy lifestyle avoids stress and negative health behaviors. Like what would be stressful? It might be traffic. So maybe it's going somewhere a little bit early, getting somewhere on time instead of late. That can help you avoid stress. Also having a routine, having a set morning routine or a workout routine can help you avoid stress because then you might be like, oh, I forgot to plan my workout. I forgot to plan my breakfast or my lunch. If those things are already planned out for you, that can avoid stress. And negative health behaviors. So obviously eating too much or not eating enough or overeating in one thing and not eating enough in another thing. So you have eat nutritionally appropriate foods. Obviously, if you're not getting your vitamins and nutrients, you're more likely to get sick. If you're not eating the right amount of protein in your diet, you might not be recovering as well as you'd like to if you're working out a lot. And if you're overeating sugars and not eating enough fiber, you might have some digestion issues. So enjoys positive relationships. You know, it's really important to have positive relationships in your life, and it's also important for you to develop those positive relationships with other people. And that just starts with being courteous and respectful toward other people, understanding people's differences, and seeing in where other people come from. So putting yourself in other people's shoes, and engage in routine physical activity. So that's going to be a healthy behavior. Obviously, personal trainers are going to motivate people to work out. Personal trainers are going to inspire people to work out, but it's really important to you yourself as a trainer or just an individual to engage in physical activity routine. For instance, I wake up and my wife and I, we typically like to go for a walk, and then we like to, or I like to work out and, you know, get my work done for the day. And then I like to go for another walk later in the day. And then throughout the day, I'm engaging in physical activity and mobility, flexibility, breathing. So I'm always trying to engage in physical activity, but I always set a purpose and an intent for my workouts. And I also try to keep that routine. Health risk behaviors. So we have some common contributors to premature health decline. So physical inactivity, you know, is one of the fourth leading causes of death, actually. Inadequate sleep, chronic stress, poor diet, dehydration, obesity, tobacco use, alcohol consumption, and poor emotional health. So these are all things that can increase your likelihood of declining in health. You look at things like obesity, things like alcohol consumption and chronic stress. And these are things that, as you know, are obviously health risk behaviors. We know that people that drink too much can have liver issues. We know people who eat too much can get cardiovascular disease, diabetes. They can have stroke, cancer, the risk of heart disease is overwhelmingly increased with the more fat that is around their belly. We have dehydration, and many people lack the amount of water needed per day. So it's important to stay hydrated. Inadequate sleep. We know tons of people that don't get enough sleep, and most of it is because you're not getting outside and seeing the sun. So your sun actually sets your circadian rhythm. It's really important to get outside and look at the actual sun, not to see it through the windows. And physical inactivity, we'll talk about that. Tobacco use obviously is going to limit your blood supply because of it's going to have detrimental effects on your lungs, and it can increase your likelihood of stroke and cancer. So let's go ahead and go to common health disorders and disease. So you have hypertension, so increased heart rate, hyperlipidemia, so hyper fat, so having more fat cells around the belly. Arteriosclerosis and arteriosclerosis. We'll talk more about that and the hardening of the arteries and what that can do over time. And it can become plaque, and then it can harden, stiffen. Diabetes, that is a blood sugar control issue from the pancreas. It's not connecting the dots anymore. So every time you need insulin, you're not getting it, and sometimes vice versa. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, cancer, depression, stroke, and systemic inflammation. These are all health disorders and diseases that are very common. Okay, depression, something you might not think about as a disease or a disorder, but it is, because it can take your ability to, you know, increase your ability to maybe eat more, or increase your ability, decrease your physical activity. So these are some health risk behaviors that we as trainers want to be mindful of, and we want to help people and their risk of diet. So physical activity and primary contributor to health. Among adults and older adults, physical activity can lower the risk of early death, coronary heart disease and stroke, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, breast and colon cancer, falls, and depression. So just imagine, you know, obviously you can lower your chances of dying earlier. If you want to live a long, happy, healthy life, then you have to stay healthy. It's just impossible. You know, obviously there are diseases and things that we can't really prevent, and it just happens, right? Like sometimes it's cancer, comes out of nowhere, you know. But there are things that we can decrease or that we can help ourselves decrease our likelihood of dying early. Coronary heart disease, for example, we can reduce that by eating a healthy diet. High blood pressure, we can work out more, or we can do more conditioning on a bike. Type 2 diabetes, we can watch what we eat, and we can make sure that we're burning amount of calories that we're taking in. Breast and colon cancer, maybe, you know, that's also associated with a poor health. And then falls, obviously, we focus on balance and many of our mobility and yoga practices and workout routines. And we think that working out helps with depression. Among children and adolescents, physical activity can improve bone health. So improving bones, obviously, going to improve muscle, which is going to improve strength, which is going to increase your likelihood of staying healthy. Cardiorespiratory fitness, having a healthy heart, is going to, you know, increase your likelihood of having a healthy heart as you get older. Muscular fitness, you know, the ability to push, pull, squat. Body composition, if overweight, and social development and confidence. These are some contributors to health. So you have social development and confidence. Obviously, if you're playing a sport, that's going to help body composition. If overweight, you know, obviously you might have to work on an adapted physical activity plan for someone that is overweight. And then also recognizing that social development can affect confidence. Physical activity versus exercise. So there's a difference. Yeah, physical activity is any purposeful, voluntary, and repeated movement that increases metabolism above rest. So basically, if you're just sitting and like I'm doing right now, I'm definitely not performing any physical activity right now. I'm just talking. But if I were to get up and say mow the lawn or sweep, sweeping might not be that much, but it is because you have to bend over, you have to pick things up. Maybe it's cleaning the dishes, maybe it's gardening. We have exercise. Now that is more planned and structured. So your exercise selections and your workouts should be very specific, and this should not be random. If it is random, and if you're looking at exercises online and to help you choose the right exercises for you, that is a concern because that is a way to get injured. So it's really important to have exercise as planned, structured, and repetitive movements. So you're not just changing your movements every week. The point of the point of progressive overload is to progress and overload over time, but you can't do that if you're doing something different each week. So that's why it has to be repetitive movements performed to improve or maintain a component of physical fitness. So key concept here, exercise can qualify as physical activity, but physical activity may not be exercise. So you might not be exercising if you're sweeping, or you may not be exercising if you're doing the dishes, but you may be exercising if you are pushing that lawnmower, right? Based on relative intensity and potential for adaptation. So if, you know, sweeping is, you know, if you're an older person or if you're a person with a disability, sweeping might be an exercise for you, right? It might be something that is more of an exercise, and it just depends on the person. So exercise principles, these are the biggest principles that you will need to know throughout your career as a personal trainer, strength and conditioning coach, yoga teacher, any coach or trainer. Principle of overload. Stress must be applied beyond that which the body is accustomed to promote adaptation. What does that mean? Okay, so if you are doing push-ups and you're able to do 10 push-ups on day one, a week later, you're able to do 12 push-ups. Another week goes by, you're able to do 15 push-ups. What do we need to do to be able to promote more adaptations? Okay, is it increase push-ups? We could increase push-ups, but that might, maybe it could hurt my wrist. Maybe it could hurt. Maybe it's not getting what I'm, maybe the point of my push-ups, let's just say it is to increase chest strength or to improve chest size. Maybe I'm looking for hypertrophy for some reason. So I might have to put a vest on, or I might have to get underneath a bar and load the bar. So I might start off with 45 pound plates on each side, I'm able to do 10 reps. Okay, I can do that on week one. Next week, I might be 45s and a five, and then a 45 and a 10. So that's the principle of overload. So stress must be applied beyond that which the body's accustomed to promote adaptations. So if I'm just doing push-ups, and I do push-ups every day, I'm not going to get any adaptations over time. My body's going to get accustomed to that. So that's why I have to increase either reps, intensity, time, type. It could be the type of exercise. So I could turn it into an incline press and I could do dumbbells. Okay, that would change the type. Okay, and now I can progress over time using a different exercise. But you have to progress over time. You start usually with body weight and then progress slowly with external weights. Principle of progression, once the body has adapted to a level of stress, additional stress is needed to promote further adaptation. So along with the overload, it's kind of with progression, right? So as you progress, you need to increase the weight. In order to increase the weight, you have to progress, okay? If you're not progressing and you're plateauing, then you either need to train just a training stimulus or you need to train the intensity of the training. So there's different ways. You can go slower. You can do eccentric push-ups. I know we're talking about push-ups because it's very familiar. You could do eccentric, so going down very slow, maybe a 10-second count, and then pushing back up. And then that would be a way to progress that exercise. Principle of specificity. Adaptation occurs in response to specific stress. Exercise must be matched to reflect the fitness goals. So my goal is a power lifter, and that is to deadlift lots and lots and lots in weight. What do you think I need to be doing pretty much all the time? I need to be deadlifting all that weight. Yes. And I need to also make sure that my bones and joints are strong enough to move that weight. So in order to induce a response, it has to be specific. So the principle of specificity basically means that if I have a shoulder issue, in order to fix that shoulder issue, I need to focus on that shoulder issue, not my left toe, right? It might be something with my toe, it might be something with my neck, but if I got something specifically going on here and I'm trying to increase, say, my push strength, then I need to focus on my push strength, or I need to focus on the scapula or the glenohumeral joint or the elbow or the wrist or whatever's limiting me from being able to push. If I'm a lineman and I'm a football player and I need to push, I have to make sure that I'm training that push and then also the muscles that correlate with that push, okay? Elastic versus plastic responses. You have elastic responses and plastic responses. So elastic occurs within a custom level of stress, but the system reverts back to the starting condition once the stimulus of stress is removed. So for example, if you're using a foam roller, that's going to have an elastic response. If you are pushing weight and you're doing push-ups and then you're putting a weight vest on and then you're going underneath the bench and then you're pushing weight, and then you're getting more and more and more, you're going to start to get a more plastic response. And that occurs with repeated stress, which causes system improvements due to adequate recurring exposure, chronic adaptations, and changes to occur. So the more you push and the more you push, the more plastic that response is going to be, okay? Now, is that something that we want to just teach people is just the push? No, obviously you're going to be pulling, you're going to be squatting, you're going to be doing a lot of other things, hip hinging, knee dominant, anti-extension, anti-rotation, that types of things. So elastic responses build upon each other for plastic changes. So you have to have repeated exposure to have a plastic response. Now, some things will only induce an elastic response, such as a foam roller, such as a massage gun, such as a massage, for instance, or cupping, or acupuncture. So these are things that are going to have elastic responses. You're going to get a little bit of a response to that stress or whatever it is, but it's going to go back, right? Same thing if you do a random exercise. Let's just say you do a headstand once, or you do a something you've never done before, like a split. You're not going to get a long-term adaptations from that response because you did it once, right? So a plastic response is something that is repeated stress over time, that you're trying to create new patterns. And whatever those patterns are, you're trying to create for a specific outcome. So obviously, you should have a purpose and a function to these plastic responses. So if the plastic response is to get you to throw better, then you got to really improve that shoulder, the elbow, the wrist, the trunk, your legs. Everything has to be a plastic response. Physical activity guidelines for health. So for baseline health benefits, you need about 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of vigorous aerobic activity per week, okay? Or a mix of moderate vigorous activity in about 10 minutes doses combined with strength training twice a week. Should exert 1,000 calories a week. You should be burning at least 1,000 calories a week, and you should be getting at least 150 minutes or 75 minutes of vigorous activity. For fitness benefits, if you want more than just the baseline, then you need the duration of the weekly aerobic activity is doubled. So you want obviously 300 minutes. So strength training remains the same, about twice a week at least, and should exert 2,000 calories a week if you want more fitness benefits. For physical inactivity, like we talked about earlier, fourth leading risk factor for death worldwide, 80% of the population do not meet the guidelines. So we know that 80% of people need personal training. That leaves a huge open door for personal trainers in the field. If you want clients, there are clients out there available. Quantifying physical activity levels. So you have moderate and vigorous physical activity. Moderate is about 3 to 5.9 on the intensity of rest. So think of something like, you know, going in the garden or cycling at a pace of less than 10 miles per hour, water aerobics, gardening, walking at less than 3 miles per hour or 3 miles per hour, tennis, like a doubles match would be a moderate intensity, snorkeling or recreational activities, yoga is another great moderate activity, golf while wheeling clubs, playing frisbee and shoveling light snow would be moderate activity. And that's relative to personal work capacity equals 5 to 6 on a scale of 0 to 10. So that just depends on the person. For vigorous, and that's going to be over 6, the intensity of rest relative to person work capacity and a 7 to 8 out of a 0 to 10 scale. So these vigorous activities for most people would be jogging, running, or repeated sprinting, swimming laps, aerobic dance class, cycling at a pace of over 10 miles per hour, downhill skiing, jumping rope, heavy continuous yard work, karate martial arts class participation, circuit weight training, team sport play, soccer, and basketball. So vigorous activities are more of your anaerobic energy system, where your moderate activities are more of your light anaerobic and mostly aerobic conditioning, okay? So you need both anaerobic and aerobic conditioning. Okay, so next we're going to talk about health and performance related concept components of fitness. If you want to pause it, you can. All right, so we're going to go ahead and get started. So the learning goals here, we're going to understand the health and performance related components of fitness. We're going to define key terms, including VO2 max. We are going to look at stability, mobility, sarcopenia, and proprioception. We're going to look at flexibility and mobility and the difference between the two. We're going to understand the concepts of normal weight obesity and strength balance, and we're going to differentiate between open and closed skills. So the HRCF and the PRCF, okay, the HRF or the health-related fitness is your cardiorespiratory fitness, your muscular endurance, your muscular strength, your flexibility, and body composition. So those are all health-related fitness components, okay? Then you have your performance-related fitness components. You have power, you have speed, you have balance, coordination, and agility. And so these are separated here. We have health-related and we have performance-related, okay? So health-related components of fitness and we have our performance-related components of fitness. So activities of daily living often include both health and mental health and performance related components of fitness, like strength, balance, power, and coordination. Health versus fitness. We have health, so disease-free state of well-being that allows for improved quality of life and independence, and simply requires appropriate routine physical activity. So health is a quality of life that is achieved through routine physical activity, okay? Now, fitness is a competency and criterion-based measures of performance. So those are the things that we measure as personal trainers, okay? That's what many people come to personal trainers for, is for the fitness. Most people are able to get health on their own. They can, you know, garden, they can walk, they can do things with their family. But when it comes to fitness and measurement of fitness, they need a personal trainer. It requires a training program that emphasizes specific physical abilities. So what are the specific abilities your client wants to attain? That's what we need to help them get. And once we get that, what they ask for, maybe we'll have some goals for them that we apply after assessment. And so if we can help them reach their goals, now we can help them achieve goals we think they might need. So HRCF, cardiorespiratory fitness, and your cardiorespiratory fitness is ability of the circulatory and respiratory and muscular systems to supply and utilize oxygen during continual physical activity. Most important, HRCF due to links with risk for disease and mortality. So VO2 max is a measure of the cardiorespiratory fitness as indicated by max oxygen use quantified by milliliters per kilogram per minute. It declines at 1% per year upon early adulthood, and decline is expected after 45 years of age. So your VO2 max does decline. It's not something that you need to really focus or worry on as far as your clients goes. It's more for fitness and sport related athletes, and it's more of a testing measure than it is something that we need to be training for. The health-related component fitness, muscular fitness. You have muscular strength, so the measure of maximal contractile force production, providing for maximal force during a single effort. Muscular endurance is a measure of contractile force decline over time, provides for prolonged force for an extended period, okay? So you have different things like pushing and pulling and squatting, which will show you strength. And then you have things like endurance, maybe like jumping rope or continuous exercises over time, like a sled push. You have muscular fitness is essential to health as it impacts movement capabilities, joint health, risk for injury, posture, stability, and functional decline. So muscular fitness is pretty much the biggest reason why most clients come to the gym to meet with a personal trainer. Stability and strength balance. Now, this is something that most clients don't come to personal trainers for, but personal trainers realize that most people need that stability and strength balance first, that core stabilization. They understand that their clients are a little bit shaky to start. They're a little bit less coordinated than they thought they would be. But that's why they're coming to you as a personal trainer. You're there to teach them fundamental movement skills. And so sometimes that's going to start with stability and strength balance. So sometimes we're just trying to reach strength, right? Sometimes we have to start here and then move to strength, move to power, move to endurance here. Because endurance isn't something we want to start at. We want to start off with stabilization, core, and then we want to go into strength, and then we want to go into power, and then we want to go into conditioning, okay? So stability is the synergistic ability of muscles, nerves, proprioceptors, and connective tissue to maintain body segment positioning and offset disruptive forces. So the body's ability to maintain balance. So if you're on one foot and someone pushes you, are you going to fall, or are you going to be able to maintain your balance? Now, if you can maintain your balance, obviously that's really important, but the older you get, the more it goes. And a lot of us as personal trainers will work with clients that are a little bit older. Strength balance, functional strength ratio of opposing muscle groups across the joint. So you have agonist and antagonist ratios. Stability and strength balance equals movement proficiency and functional kinetic chains. So you have different kinetic chains that move up the link. So you have your ankles to your knees, to your hips, to your spine, all the way to your shoulders and to your neck. OK, Okay, so that works up a continuous kinetic chain, and that's all through a stability and strength balance, using agonist and antagonist ratio. So we'll get more into that in a little bit. Flexibility and mobility, there is a difference. Flexibility is the ability of a muscle to move through a range of motion at a single joint in a single plane, independently measured at specific joints and impacts function, injury risk, and chronic pain risk. So flexibility is the ability to kind of like hold my arm here, whereas mobility is the ability to actually move my arm here, okay? Now, I can look at here and see this person stretching out, touching their toe. That's more flexibility. Mobility is the ability to actually move that foot in that place. So mobility, ability to move cooperative segments through a full unrestricted range of motion without undesirable changes in biomechanics. So you're not compensating. So when I move my shoulder into flexion, I'm not extending my back, right? Or if I bend my elbow, I'm not elevating, or I'm not depressing my scapula when I do that. Multiple joints are used rather than one in mobility. So sometimes during like a kick, for example, you have many different movement sections going on at once. So you should be able to independently move in mobility, and then you should also be able to move things at the same time. It's restricted by muscle fascia across body segments. We'll talk about that. Your whole body is interconnected like a web of muscle and tissue, and it's all interconnected. Okay, so try not to think of these muscles as just one muscle moving everything. There's links of muscles that go throughout the body, and we call them anatomy links. So flexible does not mean mobile. So the ability to bring your arm over your head does not mean that you're going to have the ability to bring your arm over your head while you're in a squat position, because that means that you lack that mobility in the thoracic spine and also the shoulder area. So they would fail the overhead squat test here, which means that we would never want to load them overhead because they don't have that ability to do that. So this is not an athlete we'd want to give overhead pressing to or any overhead squatting to. That would be, they'd be a very high risk of injury. So that's why we have these types of mobility tests. Body composition. So measuring body fat is very sensitive subject. So many clients may decline to get a fat observation or a scale or a measurement done. And that's okay. You can use the ones for the hands. Many gyms have those, and they can get a rough estimate. So body composition is indicated by the ratio of fat mass to fat free mass within the body expressed as a body fat percentage. Losing fat or adding muscle will both change body composition, and subcutaneous and visceral, intramuscular and essential. So there's different types of fat. So you have subcutaneous underneath the skin, visceral in, is like in the stomach area, intramuscular and around the muscles, and then you have essential fat around the organs. Key concept here, health risk is determined by the percent of fat mass in the body, not the absolute quantity of fat. And a 200-pound man with 40 pounds of fat would be 20% body fat. 140-pound woman with 40 pounds of fat would be 28.5% body fat. So she would be at a higher risk of disease. So you have to look at the fat-free mass, and you have to look at the body fat compared to that. So we want to be less than 25 or less than 20%. Obviously, if you want to look at your body fat and see where you're at, men, you don't want, we're going to go more into this in a little bit later, but men, you don't want to go under a certain amount, and women, you don't want to go under a certain amount. So women, you want to make sure you're above 12%, and men, you want to make sure that you're above 6%. Anything below that is, can be detrimental for your health. Women like 16 to 25, men 12 to 20 is pretty reasonable. So the obesity epidemic. Obesity is an unhealthy quantity of fat mass relative to lean mass or weight. It may be defined as an excess body fat percent based on sex or BMI. So you can do a quick BMI. You want to be under 25 BMI and I think above 17. And what that means is that you're in a healthy category. So you can look up your body weight to height weight ratio and just Google BMI and get it, and you'll figure it out and see where you're at. Look at the scale. You want to be in obviously a good zone, but this is just a quick assessment that we can do with our clients. So a normal weight obesity classification indicated by normal weight in relation to population norms, but high body fat percentage, you can have what is called skinny fat. CDC says that 70% of U.S. population is overweight, and 35% of U.S. adults are obese based on BMI. So most people are overweight, and 35% of people are obese. And obesity is obviously a classification in which you're at a high likelihood of cancer risk, stroke, and heart disease, which are very detrimental to quality of life and can leave you, can you know, push someone into the grave at an earlier age than we want them to. So that's one of the main reasons why there's personal trainers helping people get in better shape. So you have the obesity epidemic. Talk about that more in childhood obesity. Hopefully you'll take that class. Diet factors associated with obesity and specific health risk. You have exercise is very important, but nutrition is more than half of the battle. So nutrition is really where it's all at. If you can control what you eat, and if your clients can control what they eat, the fitness part and the weight part probably won't be an issue. But if your client eats everything and, you know, they're asking you how come they're not losing weight and they're not, they're not really listening to you, then, you know, they're not going to have long-term changes. So diet factors associated with obesity and specific health risks include oversufficiency and excess calorie intake, obviously taking in too many calories at a time. And maybe that's just going out to eat and getting 1,000 calories because you're getting your, you know, if a Big Mac, a fry, and a Coke is about 1,000 calories at least. And if you think about a normal lunch like a peanut butter and jelly, that's less than 400 calories. So if you were to have a peanut butter and jelly instead of that Big Mac, fries, and Coke, you'd be probably getting less calories, okay? High in sugar and processed carbohydrates. So obviously getting sugar in through, you know, bagels or biscuits or croissants or any types of breads and carbs and noodles, that those types of things, and pizzas, that's going to be very high processed and very high in sugar, unless you're getting whole grains, right? High in saturated fat. So obviously you're going to have high saturated fat in your fried foods, especially. You're going to have high saturated fats in your fatty foods, such as like chicken wings, something like that. Low in potassium and high in sodium. Obviously if you're getting things like chips and you're not eating things like grapes, you're going to have very high sodium and not enough potassium in your body. Low in fruits or vegetables, if you're not getting your electrolytes from your fruits and vegetables, or if you're not getting your fiber from your fruits and vegetables, your vitamins and nutrients from your fruits and vegetables, your likelihood that you're just not eating those things, and you're probably not eating the right things. Low in water and high in alcohol. And so those would be how to increase the obesity. The PRCF, okay? Power, okay, performance related concept of fitness. We're talking about power here. So power is the rate at which work is performed. Training focuses on acceleration rather than just loading. So power would be the medicine ball throw. Power would be a box jump. Power would be sprinting. Power would be a overhead one arm snatch. Power would be a kettlebell swing. Okay. Development requires fast twitch fiber recruitment. So the bigger muscles there, the glutes, fire activation, bigger muscles activating for these power exercises. These aren't things we typically do in the beginning of a person's workout routine. Kind of have to build them up to that. Example activities, Olympic lifts, right? You have your deadlift, your bench, you have plyometrics, weighted jumps and throws. Okay, power equals independence. Sarcopenia is a loss of total skeletal muscle mass with age, which diminishes function, particularly fast twitch muscle fibers. So there's fast twitch muscle fibers like your big quads, your big hamstrings, your glutes, your biceps, you know, all these big muscles, you're going to lose the as you get older, and you're going to not be able to, you know, get things overhead, get out of bed as quick. So power equals independence. So powerful over the lifetime. That's why we teach power training to older individuals, even though we're going to modify it and we're going to work them up to it. But we are going to teach them some power training. We're not going to be having them put a barbell on their back, but we are going to have them do some med ball throws, med ball slams. So functional aging and prolonged independence and is a reduced risk for a debilitating sarcopenia. So practical pointer here, various daily activities such as getting out of a chair unaided require notable hip power. Power training is specifically useful for older adults to maintain independence. So being able to squat, having the functional mobility to squat, be able to get out of yourself, get out of a chair, right? So performance related concept, fitness, speed. Okay, speed is the rate of positional change over a distance in a measured period of time expressed as performance time, okay? Speed training is more for sport athletes. We might not do this with all of our clients. Can you know be at a higher risk of injury, but speed is essential and speed is the number one power exercise. So it depends on the neural recruitment patterns. Adequate muscle fitness, stability, dynamic balance, and mobility is needed. And increased gait speed equals lower risk for falling or fractures among the elderly. So if you do have speed and you're older, then you're going to have a lower risk of falling. Balance. So balance is the ability to manage forces which disrupt stability, allows for more efficient movement, posture, and body control. Reduces the risk for injury or falls, and neural adaptations optimize force coupling and proprioceptive function. So if you're adding balance, you know, one-legged exercises, that is all going to improve body control, posture. It's going to optimize force coupling. It's going to improve proprioceptive functioning. It's going to improve neural adaptations. Okay, so one leg training is probably the best thing you can do. One leg training or a split stance training or training where you're using one arm or one leg. Okay, so when you start using balance, you start using a lot more than you think. The exercises become more functional. Coordination, okay, coordination is the ability to control and use multiple body parts and or senses in synergistic and efficient fashion to perform complete complex tasks. So the ability to hit a ball out of the air with a racket would be coordination. The ability to hit a ball with a bat, the ability to kick a ball out of the air in soccer, the ability to jump through hoops or to jump in and out of a ladder drill. Hand-eye coordination combines visual processing speed with neuromuscular control of the hands. Okay, hand-eye coordination with the rackets, ping pong, stuff like that. Agility, you have open and closed skills. Agility is the ability to perform rapid and whole body movements with changes of velocity, direction, and response to an analysis of the environment. It is not synonymous with COD proficiencies, require both motor and data processing efficiency. So you have open versus closed skills. You have an open or closed skill, open or closed skill. So you have your open closed skill of a man running straight ahead. That would be a closed skill, okay? An open skill would be a going around a curved path, so going through an obstacle. So you have different types of open and closed skills. So the most popular physical activities in the United States, they are number one, walking with friends or walking for fitness. Number two, running or jogging. Three is the treadmill. Four is bowling. Five are free weights. Six is bicycling. Seven is weight training or resistant machines. Eight is stretching. Nine is hiking. And 10 is swimming for fitness. And these are the most popular physical activities in the United States that most people do. And that's going to conclude our chat today on understanding wellness and health and performance related components of fitness. All right, everyone. I'm Dr. Weber, and that is it for today. And thank you.